Morning. We're going to call the Tax Committee to order. And we're going to start with Representative Marquardt's bill. So as Representative Marquardt comes up, I'll tell members, we're hearing some bills today because even though that the second omnibus tax bill is out, we are trying to hear bills that either we didn't quite get to or they are in the Senate omnibus tax bill, so we want to understand what the Senate is up to. So we're going to start with Representative Marquardt. And Representative Marquardt, we're not going to move it. Or I guess we actually can hear yours, can't we? I guess we don't have a quorum yet, so we can't move it. But Representative Marquardt, your bill is in the Senate tax bill, and so that's, I don't know how we missed it. I don't know if it was a late entry, but please tell us about your bill, if you can.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committees. It was a late entry, I will say that. So that's most of your committee meetings were already done, but I will try to tell you what the Senate is up to, as difficult as that may be. House File 3321 is this. Currently, all admissions to the Minnesota State High School League games, activities, and so forth are exempt from sales taxes. And this came about during the Minnesota Twins debate back in 2006. Representative Fenstead had this bill. And it was for 5 years at that time, and then it sunset. Well, in 2011, when that time frame came up, it was extended until 2015, a four-year sunset. And so what this bill would do is eliminate the sunset and make this exemption to Minnesota State High School League events, admissions, exempt from sales taxes. Now, currently in state law, the high school league has to calculate what this sales tax would have been. And then it is dedicated to a fund that goes to extracurriculars for students in schools. And you have a couple handouts in front of you, and basically it's about $750,000 that would be sales tax right now that goes to this dedicated fund, and about $450,000 goes to pay for student fees for extracurriculars, and about another $300,000 go to grants. That part does not change at all in this law. So, for example, Madam Chair, back in 2008, when you were watching your son do very well in the state wrestling tournament, you paid maybe $10 for that ticket. And they calculated the local exchange that would have been the local rate at the XL Energy Center, which would be about 7.6%. So 76 cents out of that $10 ticket went into this dedicated fund that helped pay. So every time you go to a sporting event, either the regional meet, that's or sections, I guess they're called, with the Minnesota High School League or the state event, a percentage then of the sales tax goes into this fund that pays to help with student fees and also with schools, with training and so forth, dealing with extracurricular. So this bill just eliminates the sunset, has this exemption into the future. And I have folks here from the high school league if you need more data on that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Is there anyone who would like to testify for or against this bill? And we don't have a quorum yet, so we can't move it, members. Questions from members on this piece of legislation? Well, okay. How many people do we need for quorum? Members, wherever you are, please come to taxes and check in. We need three more people. And I know it's hard getting started after the break sometimes, but if that's all right, Representative Marquardt, we're just going to go to the next bill. We'll formally move yours when we can.
Sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Is Representative Hoppe here? Yes, great. And Representative Hoppe, when we get a quorum, we will move your bill. He's not a member of this committee. We wish.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you.
And Representative Hoppe, I was just hoping that enough people were still short of a quorum. But we will just start anyhow. Representative Hoppe, I just want to say ahead of time so members understand what's going on here. Representative Hoppe, talk to me about hearing this. And I intended for it to make it into the omnibus tax bill, just like the regional rail. And members will recall we had an author's amendment on the floor for this bill and the regional rail that was voted on the floor, but we never got to hear the bill. Again, a late entry, so we're doing that now. So Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time, and it's nice to be back here. We are looking at, and there was a little bit of flurry of interest on this bill because I think some people in the cable industry thought it impacted them. It doesn't, and I'm going to turn this over to the experts here in just a second, but essentially what we're doing in my layman's term is we're changing the way that we tax cabling for computers in an office or a warehouse environment. Are we looking for a copy of the bill?
Nope, we're good.
Okay.
Go on. Thank you. Sorry.
And with that, Madam Chair and members, I will stay up here and be here for question, but I'm going to turn it over to two gentlemen from Bailiwick in Chaska, and they will explain in slightly more detail why this is a good idea.
Great. Thank you.
Let's go first. Go ahead.
Hi. Our company provides technology services.
Identify yourself.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm Bob Marco. I'm president of Bailiwick. Our company provides technology services to large Fortune 500 companies across the United States, Canada, and the U.S. territories. A segment of our business is tied to communications cabling and the infrastructure that is put in place to support voice and data networks. What we're seeking is some clarity on that line of business that we are performing. As I mentioned, we provide this service nationwide, and probably the most difficult time we have reconciling our sales taxes in our own home state. And so we are on a every three-year audit, and every time we have an auditor come in, we get a different story. So this last go-around, we appealed, and after many, many months of discussion, we basically came to a stalemate. We won our appeal, but they were very clear in our appeal that the decisions that were made for this last appeal period will not impact any future audit periods. So essentially, we still don't have clarity on how we're supposed to be taxing one of the largest components of our business. What we're really talking about here is the infrastructure that the wiring, the fiber, and the copper that's put in place to support voice and data networks. Due to National Electric Code, this wire has to be installed on a temporary basis. So what we're talking about here is really a tangible, removable infrastructure that's not a real property upgrade. It's really geared towards supporting the infrastructure of the then current tenant of that facility. So National Electric Code requires that this cable come out at the end of its useful life. And so therefore, because we know it has to come out, it has to temporarily be installed, and that's really the heart of what we're saying here from a retail perspective, is that this be treated as a retail sale.
Madam Chair?
Thank you to the witness. And
I'll move Representative Hoppe's bill before.
Thank you, Representative Zeller. First, I will call the meeting to order. We do now have a quorum. And Representative Zeller moves House File 3256. And I do believe there's an author's amendment. Is that correct, Representative Hoppe?
There is a, I don't have it in front of me, but there
is an A1 amendment in our packet.
Yep, there is an A1 amendment. I believe it is technical in nature, just to change. I guess it's I'm not sure if that was from the National Electrical Contractors or whatever it was decided that would make it work better. It doesn't substantively change the bill.
Great. Representative Zillers, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
I would, Madam Chair.
So move. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. So adopted. Thank you. Yes, Representative Hoppe, would you like to introduce your second witness, or at this point are you just open
to
questions?
He's just here to answer questions if we need it. And, Madam Chair, I think that's essentially it. We're just looking for a little clarity here, and I think to change the way that this has been looked at.
Great. Any further questions on this bill? Otherwise, do we have possession of this one? Okay, then Representative Zellers moves that we recommend House File 3256. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. So adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And next, House, while we're waiting for Representative Lancheski to come out, let's just quick move the minutes. Representative Marquardt moves the minutes of March 26th, 27th, and April 2nd. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay? So adopted. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
And now we will catch up with Representative Marquardt on the bill you presented
earlier. Would it be appropriate at this time for me to move House File 3321?
Yes,
I will move House File 3321.
And for those members who came in later, we heard this earlier and had a good discussion. all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay? So adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Lancheski, which bill would you like to take first?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would like to move House File, or not move, I think, I don't have the annotated agenda. I'm not sure which of these bills I have possession of, honestly. So I was going to do the regional rail. I think we do have possession of that. And if I may, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 3346, and I do have an author's amendment.
Thank you. House File 3346 has been moved, and the author's amendment is A1. All in favor of adopting that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay? So adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill is, as I mentioned with Representative Hoppe's bill, we had an author's amendment on the floor that included this bill and Representative Hoppe's bill on the floor. We did not hear either one of them until today, Representative Hoppe's bill being a late entry, and mine was an omission when we looked at the sales tax article for what exemptions we're going to provide to local units of government. People will recall that we had we included the joint powers agreements, the HRAs and the port authorities, and this would just simply add the regional rail authorities to that provision. So that's it.
Any questions? Madam Chair, I did have one question, and does this apply to the CTEB, the County Transportation Board that's in the metro area?
If Ms. Dalton can answer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't believe that they are a regional rail authority. I would have to look into that further, though.
I think they may just be a funding resource and not do the actual construction. Which might be why they don't need a sales tax. Any other further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. And committee action is finalized. The next bill is House File 33. Which one do you want to take next? The 2855 or 2207?
House File 2207, if I may, Madam Chair, and that one is in Commerce, so we can't formally act on that. But if I may, Madam Chair, just to talk about House File 2207, this bill, what this does is it stops what the lottery did, which was begin online. The sale of lottery tickets online. And if you look at the bill summary, it's one of the shortest bill summaries you'll see. And so I will read it. Creates new restrictions on the sale of lottery tickets, expressly prohibits the sale of lottery tickets through any website or through any self-service equipment attached to or situated adjacent to retail fuel dispensation devices. This would apply to both instant win games and drawing-based amendments. And members, just to talk a little bit about that, that's with the DE amendment on it. Because I'm a little confused, and I'm looking at staff right now, because I guess I didn't know that the DE was added to that. Maybe Mr. Michael can help me out on that.
We can't.
No.
Or Mr. Biggerstaff.
Mr. Biggerstaff?
Madam Chair, members, the bill, House File 2207, is actually in the Commerce Committee, so this would be an informational hearing. The DE amendment would mirror the Senate's language, which is why that's in here. So I think what you want to do is consider the DE amendment.
Okay. Madam Chair, and I want to apologize for the confusion. That really was not my intent to consider the DE amendment. What I want to do is talk about the bill I introduced. And I know in Commerce, folks are looking at doing other things, attaching other things to the bill I introduced, and I know Representative, I believe it was Schoen, talked to me about talking about some things in this committee, and I thought, you know, let's just put the amendments out there and people can talk about them even though we can't act on anything. But what I would like to talk about is the bill I introduced, and that is the bill that Senator Skoy and I are carrying. And the way that came about is Senator Skoy came to me and said, look, I'm going to do a bill to prohibit online gambling with the lottery. Would you be interested in being the House author? And I said, yes. Folks who know me and how I feel about gambling know that I've been an opponent pretty much of all gambling. I haven't carried legislation to repeal gambling that the state does, but I've certainly been one who has not wanted further expansions of gambling, whether it's casinos in my community at the Mall of America, whether it's things like online lottery gambling, all the myriad of gambling that comes before us. But this bill really was the Senate tax chair's bill. And again, he asked me if I would carry the bill with him, and I said I would. So it was sent off to Commerce and promptly not heard. But I thought really the reason I wanted to talk about it here today is because the Senate did hear it in taxes, even though the way it was introduced, there were no tax provisions in it. And so if you look at the bill as introduced, there's really no tax nexus. But the Senate heard it. They then sent it, I believe, to their general register. I'm not sure what they call that in the Senate. But they are carrying some money for some changes as it relates to some of the ideas that people are considering in this legislation on the spreadsheet in the Senate tax omnibus bill. So when I learned that, if you read the spreadsheet that's going to be in conference committee, for those of us who are conferees, I know Representative Davids will be working on this, and Representative Dabney's here, and Representative Slogan and Representative Torkelson, there is a provision in the Senate tax bill relating to this bill now, and there's money being carried in the spreadsheet for it. So I just thought it would be important that, since we know at the end of the day the tax conference committee is going to work on this in one way or another, that we discuss it here now. As to the DE1 amendment, I guess that did add the fuel dispensing, but that was not the bill I introduced, and I'm not sure what form the bill takes in the Senate as it relates to that. So that's kind of where I'm at with this. You know, I personally feel, and this really isn't the purview of taxes, so I'm looking to my colleagues who serve on Commerce who might want to get into this. You know, I didn't want to see the lottery go ahead and start online, gambling. And I think there's probably a disagreement going to play out in the courts as to whether they have the authority to do that or not. But if the legislature acts this year to say that they cannot do that, then they cannot do that. And that's what I support. Again, the bill as introduced had no tax nexus, but went to the Senate Tax Committee, and parts of it are in the Senate tax bill. So thought it was important we discuss it in this room. And I think there are people from the public who want to talk about it, Madam Chair. And then I have a number of handouts that Mr. Beltrandi has that should be passed out as well. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lancheski. And the handouts are being distributed as we've been discussing this. And I think it's important to once again note that it's not in front of us. We're discussing this for informational purposes. And so I think what we'll do is we'll take some questions from members about the bill or its impact or the background information here. But we have a large number of people who would like to testify. And I think before we get the broader discussion going, we should maybe hear from the public. So if people have questions about the bill before us, that would be the appropriate time. Representative Davids?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, do we know, first of all, why this wasn't heard in Commerce?
Representative Chesky?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know that answer to that. I was just told that it's going to be heard yet this week in Commerce. But we had gone ahead, as you know, Mr. Chair, we scheduled this calendar before we took the break. And then the night we were supposed to come into taxes was a long night on the floor, so I canceled it and said we'd come back. So we had scheduled this, you know, a couple of weeks ago. We knew we were going to hear this. I can't speak to what Representative Atkins is thinking, but I know he has now scheduled the bill. He has possession of it in his committee on the 24th, so in 2 days.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, yes, or maybe research staff here, the Senate language, what does that do as compared to this? What does the Senate language that's in the tax bill do?
Mr. Biggerstaff?
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, I believe the Senate language mirrors the DE1, but I would have to look. I'm not positive. I think that the Senate language includes both online gambling and the fuel pump, play at the pumps program.
Okay. Well,
Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think this is a very, very good bill. I believe the lottery has no authority to go forward with online gaming. If you think about it for just a second, when the lottery was voted on by the people of Minnesota, I don't think Al Gore had yet invented the internet. So I don't think it was even there. So I don't know how the lottery, in their wildest dreams and imagination, can come up with a conclusion that they have authority to do this, number one. Number two, think about what we're doing here, people, what the lottery's thinking about. They're thinking about putting games at the gas pump. And as I said in Commerce Committee, just imagine, if you will, for a second, it's 5 o'clock, we're talking about rush hour, everybody's at the gas station, you're lined up 8 deep, and you're going to be late to get your Amway meeting, and somebody's playing games at the pump. I mean, if there's one thing I never have been late to, is an Amway meeting, and I want to make sure I never am. And so this is insanity at its finest, to think that we're going to line them up 8 at the pump, and you're playing scratch-off games at the gas pump. I mean, that is, I've heard of some really dumb things, but I can't think of anything dumber than this right now. I'm sure I can think of something, but I can't think of it right now. So I like your bill. We have to get it through, no matter, you know, this will be the one thing we can agree with on the Senate and just take it, just accept it in conference committee. So thank you for bringing this forward. I don't know if I'm an author this yet, but I just sent a text out, and I'm going to be very quickly, if I'm not already. So thank you for bringing this forward. The lottery is way out of bounds here, and we have to rein them in and tell them the way it's going to be, because they're making stuff up as they go, and I don't appreciate it. And I have never been late to an Amway meeting.
Representative Hansen has a question, and then we're going to go to a testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe staff could help with this. I know we have a handout that talks about the impacts related to the general fund, but also the trust fund, the natural resources fund, and the game and fish fund. And maybe if Mr. Biggerstaff could just walk through that impact, and if that impact is on the chair's bill, or if that's an impact based on the DE.
Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hansen. And before we go to staff, I don't know if it's the fiscal folks, and they're behind you, Ms. Templin. I think it applies to both, Representative Hansen. And I think one of the things that was frustrating to me, and unfortunately now, to stop the online gaming, which I, you know, I don't have this idea of at the pump. That's a different issue. That's not in the bill I introduced, but I understand people are interested in it bipartisanly here, both in this committee and in others. But whether you're talking about that issue or online gaming, there's a cost to the fund to buy away that problem, because what I learned is that was added to the forecast. So I think it's particularly frustrating to find out that not only did the lottery go ahead and start online gaming, but that got built into the forecast. So if we want to reverse that, we have to pay for it. And if I'm misunderstanding that, I would hope Ms. Templin would correct me. But I think to get to Representative Hansen's technical question, I think we need Ms. Templin to talk about the fiscal note.
Ms. Templin, do you want to join us and explain the fiscal note? Appreciate that.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. For this bill, there's a fiscal note, and it's for Senate File 2128-2A, and that mirrors the Representative Lencheski's bill with the DE1 amendment. This fiscal note that you have in front of you also mirrors the bill as introduced in the Senate and in the House, and the fiscal notes are the same. And to get to Representative Hansen's question, the Minnesota Lottery is forecasting a loss in general fund and non-general fund revenue. Lottery in lieu, 27.57% goes to the general fund, and you can see on the top line that there is an estimated loss to the general fund, according to the fiscal note, of $1.5 million in fiscal 14 to $4.399 million in fiscal 17. And there's also a reduction in revenue for non-general fund accounts listed.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, and so would that short the bills that are moving for the LCCMR currently?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, that is a question I'm not able to answer. That is something I could get back to you.
Appreciate that. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hansen. I mean, I think they would, and I, again, am willing to be corrected. That's why we'd have to pay for them, so they wouldn't be. So it's an $8 million price tag now, if you look out into the forecasted window, to buy away this act of the lottery that's gone to online gambling to keep everyone whole, which I find doubly unfortunate, because I think we would disagree around this table, but many of us think that the lottery didn't have that authority, and I know the lottery feels differently, and I'm sure they'll be here to tell us that. But, you know, whether they did or not, if it's in the forecasted window now, too, and I'm sure you're concerned about the legacy funds, we would have to pay to stop the lottery gaming online so that no funds are harmed as a result of the action.
Thank you. And I would just add that on page 4 of the fiscal note, I see something that I've never seen before, and maybe it's just the committees I serve on, and that is part of the cost is $2.5 million, which is due to the lottery's contract with the vendor, allowing the vendor to be reimbursed for cost incurred should the program be discontinued. So when there's a question about whether or not it was authorized to do it, it's interesting that they built that added cost into us should we disagree with that interpretation of current law. That's a pretty hefty price tag. And with that, I think we're going to hear from the public. We have quite a number of people who'd like to testify. And we'll begin with Ed Van Petten of the Minnesota Lottery. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ed Van Petten. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Lottery, and to my left is Don Feeney, Director of Research and Planning for the Minnesota Lottery. I think we need to start with some background. The Minnesota Lottery began sales by subscription, and that was simply the draw games like Powerball, Mega Millions in November of 2010. And those subscription sales were not real-time sales. They were not active until the following business day. In September of 2013, sales began as real-time sales. In other words, you could buy a ticket for Powerball, Mega Millions, any of the draw games, and it was active after the transaction. On February 6th of 2014, electronic instant tickets became available. Throughout the history of the internet sales by the Minnesota Lottery, there has been a cap for spending of $50 per week per individual. So no matter what games you're buying, you cannot spend more than $50 in any 1 week period. I was appointed to this office and took office March 1 of 2012. When I arrived, there was a legal opinion from the General Counsel of GTEC Corporation and the General Counsel of the Minnesota State Lottery that this was proper action. Subsequent to that, we began negotiating a contract with a company called Scientific Games International. And prior to them proceeding with the negotiations, they hired a Minnesota attorney. My understanding is a former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court here, to research this issue. He also determined that the actions of the Minnesota State Lottery were legal. Now, to let you know, GTEC and Scientific Games International are two of, if not the two biggest gambling companies in the world. They are licensed throughout the world. If they violate the law in any jurisdiction they're licensed in, it would cost them fortunes. So I felt fairly comfortable going forward with their legal opinions on this issue. At this time, and just to let you know, as of yesterday, since November of 2010, we had sold $3.38 million worth of draw tickets online and $170,000 worth of electronic instant tickets. On any given day, we will sell at least $1 million of scratch tickets through brick-and-mortar retail environments in the state of Minnesota, and almost that much in draw sales. At this time, there are internet sales throughout Europe, the UK, Germany, France, Italy, all of the Viking lotteries, all of the Canadian lotteries, Australian lotteries, and Asian lotteries. It's close to 100 jurisdictions, and then there are 9 other U.S. lotteries with internet-based sales. Throughout the world of lotteries, there has never been one jurisdiction report that there has been an added problem of addictions. There has not been one jurisdiction report an adverse effect on the retail environment. In fact, every jurisdiction has reported increased sales at brick-and-mortar retail after the introduction of internet-based sales. The reason for that is simply brand awareness, and we do consider this more of a marketing tool than a sales tool. The other interesting fact is that there has not been one jurisdiction report that there has been any cannibalization on other types of gaming in their jurisdiction. The system we are using was audited by a third-party private auditing firm, Raxis LLC, from Atlanta, Georgia, to verify that the age verification software and geolocation software we are using is working and working properly, and it is. We are not in competition with charitable gaming or casinos. We view the market shares of all three as totally different. I do know there's some overlap. There is with anything. But we're not marketing to the same person or for the same reasons. One verification of that is we have vending machines in a number of pull tab locations, social environments, and I go out and I've visited with the owners of those social environments, and pull tab sales in those environments increase anywhere from 10% to 20% without fail. In 1988 and 89, the legislature gave us a mandate to generate funds principally for environmental purposes. When that act gave the authority to the executive director of the lottery, it stated that the director had the authority to determine what games and which tickets and distribution methods for those tickets. The legislature then placed 3 limitations on those authorities, and that one of them was not the restriction of internet sales. We are using this technology to evolve. The retail environment has to evolve, and you all watch the news. The retail environments that are refusing to embrace technology are going out of business. And our sales are starting to decline, and we know that it is brand awareness, and we have to push to further that brand awareness. This measure would prohibit us from any type of technological growth in our marketplace. If the lottery fails, then you're hurting retailers. In the state of Georgia last year, retail sales were down so far they had to cut retailer commissions. The Georgia Lottery is the next lottery that intends to launch electronic instant tickets. So it is embraced throughout the country and throughout the world as the method to get your brand out before the public. I believe that in the late 1980s, maybe the internet wasn't popular then, but I believe the drafters of this legislation could see that technology was evolving drastically and that they couldn't be tying people's hands. We also, at that time, didn't have satellite communications, but 90% of our terminals in the field are utilizing satellite communications. There are, I mean, the Minnesota State Lottery is not doing business in any way, shape, or form like they were in 1990 when they first started. They were hand-delivering tickets. We don't do that anymore. Everything is changing. Everything is evolving. We feel that our measure limiting spending to $50 a week is a very responsible amount of money. It actually, I think by doing that, increases the sales of our retailers and drives people to our retailers. I have an interesting statistic in all of the research we've seen, and roughly 54% of young adults 18 to 24 say they do not play the lottery because they never frequent stores where it's sold. However, the petroleum marketers told me that 55% of the traffic in convenience stores is 18 to 24. So that shows that the lottery is just simply not on these young adults' radar. The internet is, and that is a way we can at least get our product known to them. I really feel that this measure has not been fully thought out as to the impact on the marketplace, on the retailers, and on the public. We are basically still in pilot with regard to our play at the pump and ATM technology. It's a pilot phase. This body, the House and the Senate, have the authority to take this action anytime they choose. Why don't we do some research? We have done the research, and you have been provided one of the research papers we have that shows that 72% of Minnesota citizens would support online sale of lottery products if run by the lottery. And that is what we're doing. I think it is very popular. I think it is very safe. And I don't understand the measure, to be honest. I really do feel that, you know, in a number of years, if we are prohibited from having an internet presence, the sales levels could reach an unsustainable level and hurt the environmental funds that we are going to that will be invested. And the other consideration I have is that, based on very sound legal advice of their general counsel, we have companies that have come to Minnesota and invested millions of dollars. And I wonder what kind of message that sends them when there is no research, no evidence, and I haven't heard really any allegation of fact that this has harmed anybody or will harm anybody. I'd be glad to answer questions.
Thank you very much. We have three people with questions, but then we're going to stop and continue on because we have a long list of testifiers, and I really want us to start the discussion after we've had a chance to hear from both sides. So I'd ask those who have questions and are on this list to ask informational questions of the lottery director, and we'll continue to make sure we get the full record before we start the more lively discussion on this proposal. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the witness, could you cite the statute where the lottery is authorized to enter into contracts on game or online gaming?
It's in Chapter 349A, I believe, Representative, but I don't have it with me. And it doesn't specifically mention online gaming, as I said. It gives the director the authority to determine games and distribute tickets in the method, to determine the method of distribution.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the witness. So your answer is there is no statutory authorizations for online gaming. It seems to me like you're coming in the back door where it says what's prohibited, and since it's not prohibited, you're saying it's okay. I think the Lencheski bill is very important to clear this up, that saying that members that it's not okay. And I think one could also argue that online games are not the same. They're different from lottery games. They're not the same games. So how we're coming in the back door with that, I think, is very, very problematic. And if you look at the Star Tribune poll of February 22nd, 2014, there's a statewide poll that says 22% do support online gaming, 65% do not, 13% are not sure. So I'm not sure what poll you're citing there, but I think we need to pass the Lincheski bill. I know it's information only today. To clear this matter up, and if we have to take it for $2.5 million because the lottery entered into a very questionable contract, I think that's just something that we'll have to eat. That's just the way it goes. Sometimes you have to live with disappointment. But it just seems to me, as you members, as you look through this, please look at this. Internet sales, play at the pump, and it gets worse. We don't have enough outlets for gaming today. We need to have it at the ATM machine. Members, this is the lottery gone wild. And members, I hope that through the Tax Conference Committee you can support the provisions that ban this activity that is so regressive, taking most from the poorest of the poor. And I think that's just wrong, and we should be. And I think it's good when you say that lottery sales are going down, lottery tickets are going down. That's a good thing because people are not wasting their money on false hopes and false dreams.
Representative Davids, I think we're going to honor the...
Well, I'm just getting going, but
I know, we're going to have the debate afterwards. It was appropriate to ask the question.
Lottery gone wild. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Davids, I know you have strong feelings on this, but it's time to keep moving because we do want to hear from everyone here. Representative Anderson had a question for the lottery director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. First of all, you had mentioned, I believe, that there are 9 states that currently allow for online sales of tickets. Can you tell me how long that have those policies been in place in those states, if they've actually seen an increase in revenue from those online sales, and if those states allow them to sell tickets outside of their state borders?
No.
Mr. Van Patten.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative. No state can sell tickets outside of their own borders. That's why we have geolocation software. I do not have the exact time. I know the state of Illinois has been selling tickets online for almost 2 years now. North Dakota was one of the first states, I think. New Hampshire was one of the first states, and they've been quite a while online.
And Madam
Representative
Chair,
Anderson.
For the director, too, if you could later on offline, if you could provide me details if they've seen any increase in gambling addiction problems, it would be helpful to have that information. But also, I'm just wondering if they actually saw an increase you had, and I think in some of the documents that it was the age of people from 25 to 34 where you're seeing the most significant drop-off in participation in the lottery, and I'd be curious to know if in those states that they've seen an increase, because as our state saw with the electronic pull tabs, it was supposed to, you know, generate all this revenue with that segment of the population, and failed miserably. So I just hope that you have a plan B if you're relying on getting those folks to participate more in the lottery, so we don't wind up in the same soup that the electronic pull tabs were into.
Mr. Van Patten, if you could get that information to our committee staff, we'll make sure that everyone gets it as well.
Madam Chair, I believe I have that information.
Oh, okay, great.
With regard to increased addiction, there is none in any of the jurisdictions. And with regard to increased sales, most of the jurisdictions are somewhat below their projections. But with our market model, we have not relied on those sales and our projections for any kind of operation, so we don't feel we have the need for a plan B. And as I said, we have never considered this to be a revenue generator as much as a marketing tool and a sampling of our product.
Representative Schoen has a question, and then we're going to go back to testifiers because we have another bill after this one as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have a couple to clarify. Mr. Van Patten, you just said it was not related to marketing versus sales, but you made comment about how the expanding market, so everybody's on the internet. Is this? I mean, do you envision long term that the internet is where you're going to go, and that's your primary sales point at some point?
No, absolutely not.
Mr. Van Patten?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. New system. No, it will never be a primary sales point. It will be our primary marketing point at some point, I think. And that's, you know, that's where retail is going. You have to have yourself out there on the internet, and so people can see what your product is. I don't know. There are very few businesses that rely solely on sales on the internet. There are some, absolutely. But most of them rely on the internet as the marketing tool to get their product known to the public.
So then, Madam Chair.
Representative Schultz.
Mr. Van Patten, so what's a non-traditional lottery player to you then? Maybe you covered that, but I mean, can you give me, elaborate a little bit? What's non-traditional?
Mr.
Because that's in your packet that says you're it's going to enable you to reach a non-traditional lottery player.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, we look at a non-traditional lottery player as someone who is not a core player. A core player is one of our players that knows our product and plays once a week or at least a couple times a month, and they keep up with what our product is. But non-traditional are those who, like I said, we're kind of below the radar for them. They don't see lottery. They go into a convenience store to buy their energy drink or their snacks, walk right past the lottery display, and it has no meaning for them.
Madam Chair, Mr. Van Patten.
Representative Schultz.
Vending machines versus the ATM. I don't know, because I don't play from the vending machine. If I get a lottery ticket ever, I'd get it at my gas station.
Right.
Can I walk in and put my debit card in the vending machine and get a lottery card?
So,
no. Mr. Van Patten?
No.
Madam Chair. No, they're cash operated. The vending machines are cash operated. The ATMs and play at the pump are debit cards, sir.
So, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Now, the vending machine is cash, and you made a statement that, so in my Lions Club, we have pull tabs at different locations, and you've said that when those machines are next to pull tabs that their pull tab sales went up by significant numbers. But now I can put an ATM in and I can walk over there. The plan is what you would like to see is now I can use my cash card or credit card or debit card to walk in those same places as well, and I could be playing the lottery from the ATM next to my pull tab booth down at Broadway Bar in St. Paul Park. Is that kind of the goal?
Mr. Van Patten.
Madam Chair, Representative, no, sir. We have not added any ATM machines in any locations. We have converted them at the request of the owner of the ATM. No bank ATMs can be used to sell through the Link 3 system or sell through their ATMs. Privately owned.
Madam Chair, Mr. Van Patten.
Mr. Representative Schoen, that'll be the final question.
That's please. Your goal, correct, is to, I mean, you would prefer to get these into as many ATM machines in bars or wherever as much as you could?
If the owner of the ATM wishes to sell the Powerball or Mega Millions through their ATM, we would, we'd enter into that contract.
Well, Madam Chair, I know we're pressed for time.
Thank you, Representative Schoen.
Put a lever on the side of these machines at some point.
And Mr. Van Patten, I think you should stay close because there may be other questions as the discussion continues. Yeah, now I need to move on. And so we have quite a long list of testifiers, so we're going to move on. Next we have Chuck Strutt from the Multi-State Lottery Association. Somebody's shaking his head. He's not here. Van Patten.
He was unable to come today. He's from the Des Moines area. He will be at the hearing in Commerce on Thursday.
All right. Thank you. Is Mr. David Gale here?
Same thing, ma'am.
All right. This is shortening our agenda. Then we'll have more time for discussion. Thank you.
I didn't realize those two were on the list for this.
And we have Mike Taji, owner of The Market. Oh, well, we had a lot of somebody giving us names that were hopeful, apparently. Mr. Van Patten.
when we found out this was informational only, those are supporters of or were opponents of the litigation or the legislation. So we determined they had to travel long ways, so we thought it was more important that they be heard in the Commerce Committee. And I apologize for any confusion.
Well, it's having two hearings this week, and we'll move on to to Jake Grassel from Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Jake Grassel. I represent Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. Our organization is made up of Minnesotans from border to border, from various social, religious, and economic and political backgrounds, but they're all united under one auspice, and that's that Minnesota already has too much gambling. Our members and coalition partners have been vocal and clear in their opposition to the continued expansion of gambling in this state, especially to online gambling, and are joined in that opposition by a strong majority of Minnesotans, as recent polls have shown, as Representative Davids pointed out earlier. We strongly support the passage of House File 2207, even though it won't be passed out of this committee today. And this prohibition is necessary for a variety of reasons. First, the lottery is currently operating a legislatively unauthorized gambling operation in which it is the sole entity authorizing, marketing, and regulating a product. The lottery clearly cannot both protect the interests of Minnesotans while profiting off of them. Secondly, the societal impacts of expanding gambling to the internet are real, even though understated by the lottery. They will reach into each and every community and devastate lives across the state. The lottery's stated purpose of expanding gambling to the internet is to attract a new generation of Minnesotans to gambling, all in the hopes of generating revenue for the state. I ask you to consider at what cost. Independent studies have shown that for every dollar spent on gambling, the community pays $2 to $3 in social and economic costs. These same studies have shown that the propensity for gambling is most concentrated within a radius of 25 miles from a casino or gambling facility. The expansion of the lottery to the internet will mean that we have a gambling facility in virtually every home, library, and Starbucks across the state. How many lives, families, and careers do we need to destroy before we say it's not worth it? I'd like to point out one thing that was said here today. To our knowledge, the lottery in Minnesota will be the first lottery, not the 10th, not the 9th, to operate instant scratch-off games. So it's not selling Powerball that they can use in that same drawing. It is instant lottery, instant gratification, which we kind of believe is more like an online slot machine. As to the societal impacts, we saw in South Dakota, I believe in 1994, when the lottery was shut down for a brief period of time, calls to the gambling hotlines virtually stopped. The problem gambling was seen throughout the lottery. So I ask you to really consider that when this comes to the floor. As for the economics, it's an economic committee of gambling, they just don't work. Gambling costs jobs. The revenue generated from gambling comes at the expense of legitimate industry. It causes divorce, crime, and a whole other set of issues. But perhaps more importantly to our future, the expansion of gambling, especially amongst 18 to 24-year-olds and our next generation, gambling in and of itself is a policy that relentlessly encourages our future Minnesotan taxpayers to lose money. It is a major factor in America's debt culture. It has turned a nation of small earners who could be small savers into a nation of habitual bettors, leading people who eagerly desire to become more financially secure down a dead-end road of deeper personal debt. Rather than encouraging Minnesotans to invest in a 401k or the IRA, the lottery is now actively conditioning people to invest in gambling to shore up their finances for retirement. The lottery asserts their authority to expand to internet gaming so that they may continue to sell false dreams of prosperity based upon a logical chance to the next generation. Capitulation to this notion will only leave a generation wishing they had saved rather than squandered, and the government will be left picking up the pieces. So I urge members of this committee, when they have the opportunity to support this bill, to do so. Thank you. I'll take any questions if there are any, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Grassel. And not seeing any questions, we'll move on to Al Lund from Allied Charities.
Good morning,
Welcome
Madam
to the
Chair.
Committee.
Thank you. Al Lund, Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. We represent the licensed gaming charities in Minnesota. The lottery is a competitor of ours, and we come at it from a little different standpoint. When we seek changes for charitable gaming, we come to you because we know that we need your expressed authority to make changes and to operate in the venues we operate in. And we are absolutely okay with that. The lottery comes from the position that they do not need your authority. If you have not prohibited it, they're okay to do it. Our attorney, who has been in gaming law nationally recognized for 30 years, tells us that they do not have that authority in no way, shape, or form. They will tell you that they have that authority from their internal documents and from their vendors. The lottery today is a competitor of ours. They're now in 144 of our sites. The lottery director will tell you that they don't have projections, but yet in their fiscal note, they project the dollar amounts increase every year. And I don't know if those projections were in part from their vendors or not, but as was referenced earlier, our group has a little experience with bringing on new technology. We believe in new technology and know that that will be part of our future. But whatever we do will come from your authority. How it's going to play out with the lottery is that the scratch-offs and lottery tickets will never deliver what they need them to deliver, what their vendors need them to deliver. So then the fixes will be the group that they're targeting, the demographic, they're going to have, it's a group that grew up with video games. They're going to have to make those games more exciting, quicker. They're going to need to raise the prize limits. So they're going to come to the state and say, we need you to make less money, at least initially, because people would rather win $1,000 than $100. And then they're going to say that $50 limit, that's a barrier to growth. We need to get that up to $500 or remove that entirely. After all, they are adults. This needs to stop, and it needs to stop here. We don't say they shouldn't be able to do some of these things. They need your authority to do that, though. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. And Representative Davids has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Lund, we just heard from the lottery that this does not affect your industry in any way. Do you agree with that statement?
I disagree with that statement.
Okay. And I would really like to know, since when the lottery is using all this information, opinions from vendors, why do we care about opinions from vendors? Are you aware, my final question on this, and Mr. Lund, you know, usually we go to the Attorney General's office for guidance on some of these issues. Are you aware of anyone in the Attorney General's office that agrees with the lottery's position that they can just do this?
Mr. Lund.
Madam Chair, sorry. I'm not aware of any opinion coming out of the Attorney General's office.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Mr. Lund, I have a question. Were you and your allies consulted at all by the lottery board as they looked at new marketing strategies, and were there discussions at all about impacts across the industry?
Madam Chair, no, we were not. My bias is the lottery operates with less than transparency, and their history is they kick out the walls, stop and see if anybody noticed. Nobody noticed, nobody complains, they kick the walls out again. And that's their history, and we're beseeching you to stop that.
Thank you very much. And next we have Brian Rushi from the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Brian Rushi, Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. We're an interfaith group working on social justice concerns. We've had a an abiding interest in gambling issues from our very beginnings back in the 1970s. And you might look at religious teachings along a spectrum as they relate to gambling. Quite a few of our traditions are quite prohibitive and warn seriously about the dangers of gambling and would suggest that people not do it. We have other traditions that are more tolerant, but even those traditions are very careful to qualify their tolerance. What they say in general, this is kind of the JRLC position, the interfaith position, is that gambling may be tolerated when it's done temporarily for a good cause as an amusement and does not become a permanent substitute for good stewardship. And where we come down in terms of the public policy on this is we oppose the state's increasing reliance on gambling revenues. We just don't think the state ought to be in the business of defrauding the public for its own revenue raising. It's very inefficient, it's costly, and as Jake mentioned, the studies are pretty clear that the social costs outweigh the social benefits by about a 3-to-1 ratio. And in fact, a man who's kind of the preeminent scholar in this area, Earl Grinnells, has Minnesota ties. He was here a couple years ago. I know Chair Lencheski and I think some other legislators heard him talk. I mean, he's very clear about this 3-to-1 cost-to-benefit ratio, and it's probably the best econometric study on gambling that you can still find. It's been a while, but it still stands up to scrutiny in the academic research. The social harms, of course, I think, are going to be worsened by the lottery going into online gaming for the very reason that the lottery director stated, which that he basically said there's a synergy here. When you have it in this place, the brand awareness, the awareness of gambling begets, to use a biblical term, begets more gambling. And that is what we find pernicious about this. We became aware of this, I think, last fall, when one of our members got a, who happens to be in the retail business, got a marketing study from the Minnesota Lottery saying, we're really worried about the 18 to 24 age cohort, and we've got to get more aggressive about marketing to young people, which is kind of what's behind all of this, is we need to get online. That's got regressive impacts. People with less money tend to do more gambling and lose more money. And then we're very concerned just about the behavioral science about this, about the rapidity of play, about playing by yourself as opposed in social settings. Those tend to accompany more addictive behavior. That's another reason we view this as particularly problematic. We don't believe voters, when they approve the, and I'll say, you know, I want you to know, we, our organization, opposed the constitutional amendment to create the lottery, and we lost. The public passed it, of course. But I just don't believe voters ever foresaw that this would become a lottery terminal. It'll be ubiquitous. We've already saturated the market. We don't need more, especially focused at 18 to 24-year-olds. So, to conclude, we think very much that the lottery needs to be more accountable to the public, and that's the legislature's role to put this, put some boundaries around this. I want to compliment the lottery for maybe the last couple decades of showing some forbearance. I think they've been reasonable in terms of their marketing techniques. They've not been overly aggressive. But I'm seeing a corner turned here, and I'm very, very concerned about it and hope that you will pass this legislation. Thanks very much. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for this witness? Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify for or against the bill that we're discussing? Please come forward and introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I'm Bill Strasinski, and today I'm here representing the interests of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association, an organization of over 800 petroleum marketers, and they have approaching 2,500 convenience stores amongst their members. And we're very much in support of this particular legislation, as 2207, as well as the DE1 amendment. A little bit of background, Madam Chair, and I... you should understand that the first of all, with respect to this issue, the Minnesota Grocers Association, I don't speak for them, but I've seen letters from them. They're the number one retailer of lottery tickets and sales. They, too, support this legislation and are opposed to what the lottery's been doing with respect to online gaming. The Minnesota Petroleum Marketers, we represent the number two retailer of lottery tickets and sales in Minnesota. We are very much opposed to this. In fact, we've had a lottery director to our board meetings because we didn't know about this till one of the original test sites had asked us whether you can use credit cards to sell lottery tickets with, and of course you can't. So we found out that this test project was going on with play at the pump issues. But we are opposed to it. And I should tell you that the National Association of Convenience Store Owners and Operators, the national organization, supports the federal legislation that's been introduced prohibiting online gambling. So we have quite a large group of people who are opposed to this. We want our customers, frankly, to come into the store. That means more to us, to buy a lottery ticket or scratch-offs. We like that, the fact that they buy a can of pop or a cup of coffee or something along with that lottery ticket. We think that's what we go. Now, the lottery director told you that in-store sales increase because of the play at the pump or perhaps online gaming as they market this thing. I submit to you, I saw the two reports that the lottery had based this information on, and they were directed and they're developed by vendors, and they're based on European models, but they were written by vendors, not by a neutral third party. So, of course, we think that the market is going to go in that direction. So I think that, too, is important to understand. Again, we do want people to come inside the store. As it relates to play at the pump, it's a very small item at this particular point in time. In 2012, there were 9 test sites. You've been told that sales increased in those stores because of these test sites. That just is not true. I submit to you that the reason sales increased in convenience stores in recent times is because there's a $400, $500, or $600 million payoff on a Powerball. That's where people are coming inside those stores to buy those tickets. So I think if you've seen increases, that's directly related to that. But the play at the pump, there's been a lot of issues. And maybe the lottery director's not aware of that because these are issues between the vendor, who's a vendor for the lottery ticket, and the vendors who install these systems in these stations. I know personally, I have talked to owners of these stations that have these systems. There have been a number of drive-offs because the system, when they put their debit card in, would crash the system. It was experimental. There was one vendor initially that could do this. It worked with one operating system, excuse me. Only one out of 100 operating systems in gasoline stations. But that system would crash the entire operating system, so credit card sales and everything. So now you're at a gas pump buying gas, and all the pump, just everything shuts down, and you've got to reboot the entire system. That's been major. I do know that the vendors have actually paid, reimbursed gasoline station owners for those lost sales in thousands of dollars, by the way. So to understand that there's no problems. I've also had other vendors tell me of the significant problems they've had where it's cost them an enormous amount of money, not only with just drive-offs, but trying to resolve disputes. You have to understand, they're big people. They sign into these contracts if you own a convenience store, but more importantly, the pump. If you buy put your debit card in that gas pump and want to buy a lottery ticket, that vendor at that pump is different from the vendor who is inside store sales. That vendor is for example, Link 3 or what have you. And if there's a dispute, you didn't get the credit, the card didn't, the receipt didn't print out with your numbers on it, you go inside the store and complain to the store owner that you just purchased $10 worth of tickets, and the store owner will tell you that it's not my problem because I don't own that equipment and I'm not the vendor for that. You have to call a lottery or somebody else. It leads to confusion. People get really upset with the owner of that station, and I tell you, that owner of that station is the one paying to fix that particular problem. The one station I did talk to recently, that system was installed in 2012. It cannot have much impact on the fiscal note because in that whole period of time, only $800 in over a year, only $800 in sales were generated at the pump in spite of all the technical problems they had. I understand that the technical problems are not resolved. I understand there's only a couple of vendors. Our primary concern is it's not available to everybody. So not all of our members get it at the same time. It's free to some. Will it be free in the future, those systems? Holiday Station, I can tell you, Super America, Quick Trip, others, the big ones, along with the mom and pops, the single owner stations, we don't want it. So I would encourage this committee to clearly understand that and think positively about this issue, this bill, when it hits the floor. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill? Otherwise, we're going to open it up for committee discussion. Are you coming forward to testify, sir? No. All right. Thank you. Representative Daphne had a...
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. Van Petten can return to the table.
Mr. Van Petten?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Van Petten, you identified that the internet sales, and we can avoid the whole you don't actually have statutory authority to do this, but you identified the move to internet sales and pay at the pump sales as a pilot project. If it is a pilot project, why was it included in the forecast? I mean, if I get a temporary job, I don't go out and buy a mortgage, because I know that it's a temporary job. It's a pilot program. Why was the alleged revenues off of this pilot project included in the forecast, sir?
The Internet we consider still to
be... Mr. Van Petten.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. The Internet, we're still developing. We have no marketing, per se. It's just out there. In fact, when this was turned on for the initial test, we had players that found the location within 30 minutes and were actually purchasing off of the Internet at that time without any knowledge whatsoever. So we know there will be some playing on this. We are in the process of expanding the Play at the Pump program and the ATM sales, so we know there will be some fiscal impact, although not major.
Madam Chair, Mr. Van Petten, but again, if it's a pilot project, why was the projected revenue that you don't have the experience yet to project as you've identified, why was that included in the forecast for the state budget?
Okay, Madam Chair,
Mr. Van Petten.
I was just informed there is nothing from Play at the Pump or ATM in the forecast. The internet sales are intended to remain. We know there will be impact from them. We are just right now in the developmental stage of that program.
Representative Daphne?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move on. But why the sweetheart provision in the contract with the private vendor? My understanding of capitalism is that businesses take risks, and because they take risks, they get paid. And if you risk right, you win, and you risk wrong, you lose. It kind of sounds like the lottery, actually. But 2.5, if a legally questionable project is found to be legally wrong, which is a possibility, I think that you acknowledged, Minnesota taxpayers are on the hook for $2.5 million. Isn't that offloading the risk that the vendor is taking off of the private business onto the public?
That is a potential loss.
Mr. Van Petten.
Madam Chair and Representative, that is a potential loss. We
business onto the public?
That is a potential loss.
Mr. Van Petten.
Madam Chair and Representative, that is a potential loss. We have not agreed that we would have to pay that back, but it is a possibility that we would have to, and we don't view that as a sweetheart provision whatsoever. But Scientific Games has informed us that they feel they are entitled to reimbursement. So if we did not include that and later on were found liable for that amount of money, we'd be taking similar type questions. So it was included in the fiscal note.
Madam Chair.
Representative Daphne.
Mr. Van Petten, I'm unclear, and I guess I need clarity. Is there a provision in the contract with Scientific Games, did you say it? Scientific Games, that if a court finds that you do, in fact, do not have the authority to administer online games, that the state lottery will pay Scientific Games $2.5 million.
No.
Is that a provision in the contract or no?
No,
Mr. Van Petten.
No, sir. It is not.
Madam Chair, can I defer to Representative Davids? He asked the right question. Why is it in the fiscal note?
I would suggest that we ask our fiscal staff to inquire of that before the next hearing on this bill, so we have a clear understanding of the implications for the state budget.
Madam Chair, is there anyone here from MMB?
Madam Chair, willing to admit it.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Van Petten, thank you. As I understand in Minnesota, that our EBT cards can be used at ATM machines. To what extent can those cards be used for these lottery tickets? Could feasibly somebody bring their EBT card, cash out the cash portion of the EBT card, and then turn around and buy a lottery ticket with the technology you have?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Van Petten.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm aware of no way that can be done unless they can acquire cash on their. I'm not familiar with the cards. I suppose it's like any kind of card. If they can get a cash advance on it, that becomes cash at that point, and we can't control how that's spent. But they cannot use that card at any of our dispensing machines.
Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and thank you, Mr. Van Petten. So as far as you're aware, the EBT card directly cannot be used to buy a lottery ticket, but cash at these ATM machines, which, as I understand, can be obtained from EBT card holders through the cash portion of their MFIP, they can obtain that from an ATM machine. Would they then feasibly have the ability to take cash from that card or any cash they might have to buy a lottery ticket at the ATM machine under your technology?
No, sir.
Mr. Van Petten.
Madam Chair, Representative, no, sir, they could not.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and also for Mr. Van Petten. One of the things that concerns me about having lottery go ahead with this without coming to the legislature is that it seems to me there are data issues here and potentially privacy issues in this. And I'd like you to talk about that a little bit. I've been reading the materials we got here talking about age verification. And I know there's a line, and I assume these materials are from you, that we were given, these about Internet sales. And so I've had a chance during this hearing to look through this a little bit. So are you using age verification technology and also this geolocator stuff and requiring people to set up an account to be able to use this online purchasing? And it does say here that all information accessed through this process is publicly available. No personal information is retained by the lottery, and no lottery employee can access a customer's private information. But that doesn't give me a lot of comfort, because we know that we're in an age where sometimes information can be accessed by people who are not actually authorized to access it. And we also know that sometimes data is sent off-site, so even if no lottery employee can access it, I don't know if a vendor employee would be able to access it. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because, you know, I don't know. I haven't yet really formed an opinion about whether the lottery violated the law by doing this without coming to us. But it is troubling that we haven't had a chance to vet these issues on behalf of the public when the lottery has gone ahead and jumped into this new way of doing business. So could you just talk about that a little bit?
Mr. Van Petten.
Madam Chair, Representative, any information that is or is under law considered to be private data is stored in a secure facility that is audited and is safe as anything can be nowadays, I suppose, but is considered to be private or safe storage and safe data. And with regard to the other point of authority, the Attorney General was requested to give an opinion and refused on that issue.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that begs the question, though, whether this is private data. Does this data have a – what makes you say this is private data? I mean, that has a meaning under Minnesota law. And is there – legislative language? Is there statutory language somewhere that classifies whatever you might collect here as private data? Because it seems to me this could be very, very sensitive. I might be a perfectly legitimate lottery customer, for lack of a better word, and not want people to know that. So this, I think, is very, I would certainly say it's very sensitive data, but is it, in fact, private data as defined under law?
Mr. Van Patten.
Madam Chair, Representative, everything we are doing, all the operations are within the purview of the Minnesota, I think, Private Data Act. I'm not sure what the proper name of it is, but it has been reviewed, audited, and all operations are within the purview of that authority. Yes, ma'am.
Well, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And well, I'm glad to hear you say that, but I think I would need a lot more information about that. And as I say, you know, if you had come to the legislature and said, can we have authority to do this, the bill would have gone through the Civil Law Committee, which really looks at the data privacy aspects of it. And because you've gone ahead and done it on your own, we haven't had a chance to really vet that and ask those questions. So I guess I'd really like more information about that, if you can provide it. Who's got the data, exactly what data is collected, how long it's being kept, who has access to it, under what conditions, what kind of trail there is about accessing that data, and how long it's kept is important, too. So if you could provide that, that would be very helpful.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Paymark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the author. Representative Lincheski, my question doesn't have anything to do with whether this was legal or not, or whether it should have come before the legislature. And you know I supported your position in the past on gambling and have always taken the position that Mr. Rushi was describing about the social costs of gambling. But I'm just wondering, because I missed your opening testimony, if there's any new research that I'm not familiar with about the expansion of gambling. I mean, Representative Anderson brought this up earlier in the hearing, and I'm just wondering the way this legislature and the governor got scammed on the e-pull tabs last year to fund the Minnesota Viking Stadium, if we haven't reached maybe a saturation point where the public is saying, you know, they're not going to waste their money on gambling. You know, there's a limit to how much I'm going to gamble, and I'm going to do it through, you know, through going to a casino. I'm going to do it occasionally at with a pull tab, maybe play the lottery once in a while, but this is it. I'm done. Maybe there's not a whole lot of recruits. Maybe the public is getting smarter. Is there any new research that's telling us differently? Because we were sold all the same arguments with the e-pull tab discussion, that we have to compete with this new technology in order to make it profitable. And the legislature obviously bought it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have gotten scammed that way. So any thoughts or any direction you can point us on new research?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
Representative Lincheski.
And Representative Paymar. And I didn't make any opening comments about that. And, yes, you and I feel the same about the gambling in general. And I agree. I want to say that I didn't coordinate with Mr. Rushi or the Citizens Against Gambling Expansion or Representative Davis, who made a great speech. Didn't talk to anybody about their testimony today, but I share their views, and I know you do, too. I brought this before the committee because the Senate has a provision, a part of it, in the Senate tax bill, and I believe we will be discussing this in the Tax Conference Committee. And I'm a strong opponent of gambling and wanting to limit it. So I didn't go through looking, you know, is there new research. But I can tell you, having done it many times, and it was referenced by some of the testifiers, the research is sound and has been duplicated in an empirical way over and over again, that gambling has huge social costs. It is a very regressive activity. It's, think of it as one of the most regressive taxes we have. We're sitting in tax committee. We're not really talking about the tax component. But, you know, some people in this room know this, that when folks were considering putting a casino in my community, I really worked hard to read everything I could. And I am telling you, it is very difficult to read the whole medley of literature out there on gaming and not come to the conclusion that it does not pay for itself. There are huge social costs, and governments should not be benefiting from it. I mean, if you support it, you ought not to have a state want to have to butter its bread with it. And with all due respect to the constitutional amendment supporters, whether it was for good things like the environment, we should not be addicted to gambling ourselves to fund our government. And it's very difficult for folks, if you read the literature, to make the arguments that the state ought to be in on this stuff. Now, there's a different legal question here, and people will argue about it. I'm trying to appeal to my colleagues. You can decide that the lottery had the right to or not, but you should help stop this. You're elected. The lottery director, who I've never met, nice to meet you, they're not. And you are in charge of making decisions here as it relates to these issues. And I hope legislators bipartisanly will understand the what's happened here and put a stop to it. While it's still $8 million, and I would argue we certainly have the ability to say we are not going to pay back that $2.5 million contract. The lottery can eat that out of its ongoing budget for making that choice. So, you know, I think there's many reasons legislators, no matter how they feel about gambling, ought to think through what's going on here and put an end to this, setting aside whether the lottery had the authority to do this or not. You know, I don't think it did, but let's say it prevailed in court and it did. We can, this year, pass into law that we're not going to have online gambling through our lottery. And we can do that. If we can get the votes off the House and Senate floor, that would be the case. But to the, you know, the question on research, when I was working in my community, and I had to do it many times over and over, and I'll probably have to do it again. As, you know, governors come and go, they like the idea of a casino at the Mall of America, and it continues to be interesting to people. I started attending some of these national conferences on gaming. And in fact, when I went, I was surprised to meet the Minnesota lottery director at that time, who's no longer there, your predecessor. And there is a whole industry at these conferences to convince legislators, states, and everybody to want to do more gambling. And it's there's so much money at these facilities, whether it's horses or casinos or online or slots, and you can just see how difficult it is to fight this stuff off when you're standing in these meetings that are designed to help lottery directors and the industry, you know, the Caesar's Palaces, the whoever, get more gaming into states. And so they really wear legislators down. They tell you, you know, we'll fund the environment that way. You know, you need it for that. Or maybe we'll fund education that way. Or maybe we'll fund whatever, you know. And there's not a lot of discussion about the social cost that goes with that and the trade-off. And I guess if I may morph into something from that, Representative Paymar, is, you know, I would just like, because we are in tax committee, to take a moment. I know we have another bill. But if Madam Chair, if you would permit me after Representative Paymar is done, I would like to ask our nonpartisan staff, Mr. Michael or Mr. Biggerstaff, to remind the committee member of what the taxing scheme for gaming is now. I would argue if we're going to have online lottery gaming, we should come up with a new taxing scheme. You know, we didn't have a discussion about how we're going to tax online gaming, ever. That's never been contemplated. It's just like Representative Hansen had a fracking bill, and because that isn't underway, he thought through a tax structure. People right now are thinking through tax structures if PolyMet happens. You know, if things like this were going to come, and whether it was privacy issues or anything else, we would be thinking through what would our tax structure be around this. You know, we all know in this committee, whether it's Best Buy fighting for Main Street fairness versus Amazon not paying the sales tax when you order online, we have tax issues of fairness when people work online or in person. We've never even discussed this as it relates to online lottery taxation. And that would certainly be a part of this committee's discussion. So, you know, I think it would be worth reminding committee members, how do we tax the lottery? And then what portion of that money goes where? I mean, I think it's good for the public always to know when you spend a dollar at the lottery, you know, how much is really turned around into the environment or other good causes? And it's minuscule members. We'd be better off funding it straight up and not paying the social costs that go with it. So at the right time, I think if Mr. Michael or Mr. Biggerstaff could remind us the tax policy around this.
I think that's a good point, but I'll let Representative Paymar respond.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. I won't belabor this because Representative Lynchesky, you sort of didn't answer my question. And it's not about the social costs so much, which we agree on. I'm just wondering if the research is telling us now that there's a select group of people that gamble, whether it's the casinos, whether it's whatever it might be, and we're dealing with the select. I'm just wondering if that's not the case given the e-pull tab experience. And, you know, the guy from the charitable gambling comes up here. You got a room full of lobbyists here. All this is about competition for a small amount of dollars from gambling. So I'm wondering if that issue has been explored, if what the research is telling us in that way. Because if it is a smaller group of people, then who cares? Let them, you know. In a way, I mean, if there's a small amount of dollars that can be spent on gambling, then who cares if the lottery expands to the internet?
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Lynchesky.
I don't have research on that. I think the e-pull tab thing, we all, you know, I didn't work on that, and like you, I didn't support that, so I'm not aware of what the research was to come to that revenue estimate when that happened, as Representative Anderson was referencing, and you are now. So I don't know. I don't know if the current thought is there's a limited pool. It doesn't seem like it to me. In my personal experience, it seems like there's all kinds of gamblers. There's some people who do some kinds and not others. There's some who do them all. My bigger concern is the state's dependency on it. So if we're getting a share, if we're getting a cut of it too, then we have an interest in promoting it and getting more people to do it if we are the winners. If we're not in on the game, if there's no state gaming happening on, we don't care if it fails or succeeds. But when we have legislators who believe they need to get more people to gamble so we can fund the environment, you know, we've set ourselves up for a problem if the population's declining or growing. I mean, I don't know the answer on that. I don't know. I do know in some of these conferences I went to that the big push is to get the level of the pace of play to be faster, to get people to, you know, if they're sitting there for 20 minutes, to gamble more money as quick as they can. I mean, you're trying to get people to lose as much of their own money as they possibly can as quickly as they can. And so the online gaming, a lot of the issues on that is that the level of play is very fast. Here they're starting with a cap, but that can change. So, you know, I honestly don't have the answer on that. I'll look into that for the hearing on Thursday.
Thank you. And since this is a tax committee, I think it is appropriate for us to hear what is the tax and revenue consequences of our current structure. And then I've got quite a list of other people who would like to engage in the discussion. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just by way of background, when the lottery was authorized, the Constitution required that a portion of the revenues from the lottery be dedicated to the environment, to an environmental trust fund, and that was, I believe, if I recall correctly, it was a 60-40 designation. I think if you look at the tax rules for most state lotteries, most of them are not subject to tax at all, because the theory is that it's essentially a state government enterprise, the profits from which, if that's the way you want to characterize them, go to the state government's operation. And so routinely, I would guess if you looked at other state lottery statutes, they would be exempt from state tax at all. Minnesota has a somewhat different pattern. Because the lottery was authorized in a period when the state had a very large budget deficit during Arne Carlson's very first year in office, and as a way for the legislature to essentially thwart or divert a little bit of the constitutional dedication to the Environmental Trust Fund, the state lottery was not exempted from the sales tax, but was instead subjected to an in lieu sales tax. And that had the effect at the time of effectively thwarting with regard to that portion of the revenues, and the law simply provides that the lottery will multiply the sales tax rate times its revenues and transfer that to the general fund. That had the effect of sort of thwarting the 40% designation to the environment fund and allowed more money to be used for the general fund at that time to close what was a very large budget gap, I think of $1 billion or something like that. And that provision has remained in effect, except that as the state budget improved over time, that money then became dedicated to a variety of different funds, mostly environmental funds. If you look at the fiscal note, on page 4 of the fiscal note, there is a percentage breakdown that shows how the lottery's funds are disposed of. This includes both streams of revenue. So we've got these two streams of revenue. One is the profits, essentially the takeout, and the second is this in lieu tax. And and these formulas essentially show how those monies are, in combination, are disposed of. And that includes the in lieu sales tax, which is the tax treatment of the lottery. So we have this historical sort of anomaly compared to most other state lotteries where we have a tax stream and just a plain, you know, sort of state government takeout from the operation.
Thank you very much for that, Mr. Michael. You always make the history and the present come clear. Next we have Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier from the lottery, what do you see as the main benefit of the online sales of lottery tickets? What would you say? I know you're a proponent of it, so what's the main benefit to the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Van Patten.
Madam Chair, Representative, the main benefit we see is a marketing tool. It permits sampling of the product, of the instant scratch tickets.
Representative Barrett.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So then, would you agree you're marketing more to younger people because they're more online and they're more apt to purchase a lottery ticket online?
Young
Mr.
adult,
Van Patten.
Yes. Madam Chair, probably more of the 18 to 35-year-old would be more likely. However, the sampling we've done, been able to capture so far, limited as it is, shows that most of the purchases are about 30 to 45-year-old.
And then one other question, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Barrett.
Now, in your role, you probably have to look at the benefits and the costs as well, societal costs. We talked about societal costs earlier. Do you look at that? Do you know what percent of people who gamble become addicted to gambling? Are you aware of that? And do you do anything in your role to understand that as it relates to what you're trying to accomplish?
Yes, sir, we do. I may point out Mr. Feeney to my left is the immediate past president of the National Council on Problem Gaming. Served two terms, and he's still on the board of directors. We support that organization fully, and I haven't seen a local figure, or a recent figure, maybe Don has here, but all the figures I've seen in the past is less than 0.5% of lottery players.
Representative Barrett?
Madam Chair, if the gentleman would have any other more current or more reliable stats, I'd appreciate it.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Don Feeney, Research and Planning Director of the Minnesota State Lottery. Madam Chair, Representative Barrett, in terms of problem gambling prevalence, it is, first of all, it's impossible to sort of break that out by type of gambling, although we know that if you look at calls to the Minnesota Problem Gambling Helpline, calls where people say that lottery gambling is a problem for them and they can select multiple things, typically runs about 4% of all the calls. It's a relatively small number, and most people cite multiple things. We know that one thing that really sets a good way of identifying somebody with a gambling problem is that they gamble on lots of different things. Somebody who's gambling just on lottery tickets is at lower risk. Somebody just going to the racetrack, somebody just going to the casino is probably at lower risk. It's when they're it's the people you see doing 8, 9, 10 different things where you see the problem. In terms of prevalence, there has not been a prevalence study done in Minnesota since 1993, and that one had some issues about it. Nationally, the overall rate of problem gambling prevalence active problem gambling prevalence seems to run, depending on how you measure it, around 1% of the adult population, and that's not an insignificant number. Interestingly, it doesn't seem to vary very much from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And for that matter, from country to country, the rates of problem gambling prevalence are about the same anywhere that you go. The National Council on Problem Gambling is about to commission a new national prevalence study. Optimistically, we will see results from that by this summer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Barrett.
Yeah, thank you. That's kind of the understanding I have. Maybe 2 to 5% of people who gamble become problem gamblers. Gentleman from Cage mentioned earlier the societal costs are like 3 to 1. So if the benefit is $1, the cost is $3. You have to understand in that when only 2 to 5% of people are problem gamblers, that's a huge cost to that small group of the people. 97% of people don't have any issues with it, but 2 to 3% do, and their cost is so high that it becomes 3 times as much as the whole revenue benefit. Now we could argue that point, but you look at this issue, you look at other issues. We had a bill last week regarding synthetic drugs, and we realized, I think, overwhelmingly that we needed to make it tougher to sell synthetic drugs. We had a vote on the House floor 2 weeks ago regarding regarding eliminating legislative DUI immunity. We have a bill up today, and I think many of us are in agreement with the problems of an addictive substance, or not addictive substance, addictive activity like gambling. And we have other bills on the docket here where there is a huge societal cost, and we'll probably take those up in the next week or two, in which 10 to 15 to 25% of people actually become use or abuse those substances. I'm thinking of marijuana right now. So I would like our committee and our legislature to understand that this is a real difficult issue for those people that become addicted. We all know that. Might be a small percent, 2 to 5%. But gambling addiction is something that has huge costs, and we would do well to look at that in all areas of addiction and all the things and opportunities that people have in our country to abuse and use. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And I had put myself on the list, and it follows really nicely from Representative Barrett's comments. And I was just going to point out that in Chair Liebling's committee earlier this session, we removed from a bill a provision that would have taken away the only report that we get on problem gambling in Minnesota. And I think that we don't know enough about the social costs and the spinoff costs. Those of us in Health and Human Services hear about it regularly, and a disappointment to me is that our fiscal notes don't acknowledge those costs as well when we're looking at this issue, and perhaps that's something we can further explore. Representative Schoen, and then I think we're going to move on to our last bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Van Petten, I'm still stuck on that $2.5 million issue, but so here's what I want to ask. Are there one singular contract for the electronic as a whole when it relates to ATM, pay at the pump, or play at the pump, and online gambling, or are they separate contracts? I assume when you put these things into place, there are signed legal contracts with vendors that work with the lottery, correct?
Madam Chairman, Representative, that is a contract for all three of those items, yes.
Madam Chair, Mr. Van Petten.
Representative Schoen.
Can you get me a copy of that contract by noon tomorrow via email?
Mr. Van Petten.
Madam Chair, I assume I can. If not, I will be in touch with your office.
Thank you, because I'm going to want that for Thursday, because we'll have that hearing for Commerce on Thursday morning. I appreciate it.
Great. I appreciate everyone's discussion and questions, and obviously this is an issue that's going to continue to merit attention. We have now in front of us House File 2855, Representative Lencheski, and this bill is not in the possession of the committee, so once again we're having an informational hearing on the concept because it is before the conference committee. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2855, members, is in the Senate tax bill, so it will be brought up in tax conference committee, and I thought we should have a discussion about it from a tax perspective, particularly to hear what the counties think about it. What Senator Scoy did is he was looking for a way to address an issue that I think all of us care about and understand, which is aquatic invasive species. So what he came up with is he
put more money into county program aid and then change the formula to add that as a factor and divvy up the money based on how many watercraft trailer launches you have and how many watercraft trailer parking spaces you have. And without getting into much more detail than that, except to, you know, take questions or have the testifiers who may be here talk about it, and I honestly don't know if people are here for and against, but I hope so. I want to hear what people are thinking, because, again, this is in the Senate tax bill and is being brought to conference committee. This really is an attempt to say, you know, where the boats are going in the water is how the aquatic invasive species is being spread. And I think we all understand in Minnesota how important the lakes are to all of us. It doesn't matter if we live along the Iowa border, the Canada border, in the Twin Cities, and anywhere in between. There isn't a community that isn't struggling with invasive species and the spread of it. So this was an attempt by Senator Skoy to try to find a way to put more money at the problem and see if we can't make some headway on the spread of these species. And so, you know, I think we'll be talking about it. I don't know exactly if this is the mechanism the House would prefer, but I think we want to prepare ourselves for, you know, approaches to dealing with this. And many of us have cabins or visit cabins or go camping or, you know, we here locally in the Twin Cities, you know, we're all paying higher property taxes to fight some of these invasive species right now in our community. So that's really how the bill works. And Madam Chair, if there's testifiers, it would be wonderful to hear from them.
Just for clarification, Representative Lancheski, we have an A2 amendment, even though it's not in front of us. Is this to reflect what is in the Senate bill under discussion right now? Could you or staff kind of give us a clue as to which language we're looking at?
I'm going to ask staff to tell us that. Mr. Hines probably knows.
Madam Chair, Representative Lancheski, that's correct. The A2 amendment reflects exactly the Senate language in the tax bill.
Thank you very much. And who would like to testify for or against this? And then we'll start the committee discussion briefly after that. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Bo Bernson. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all 87 counties in the state. I also will be speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Intercounty Association as well. First of all, we want to thank Chair Lancheski and the committee for bringing this bill forward and for proposing such a major investment in battling the spread of aquatic invasive species in Minnesota. This is an extremely important issue for Minnesota counties as the spread of AIS threatens our local economies and our way of life in our state. We're also grateful that Chair Lancheski has brought forward the amendment before you today, which we worked on with the other body in crafting, which provides greater flexibility to counties to use this money in cooperation with other local governments and environmental organizations. We have many of our member counties who are extremely supportive of this proposal and who are eager to either use these dollars to support the work they're already doing on battling AIS with local property tax dollars, who are already planning on how they could use these dollars in cooperation with their local soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts, and lake associations. I would say that there is some concern among our members as to whether county program aid is the appropriate mechanism for delivering this funding. While we don't necessarily oppose this bill, which is providing this funding on top of and separate from existing county program aid, we also do not want to see this bill, if enacted, set a precedent for carving up the existing general purpose county program aid that is used to offset county levies and replacing it with aid that can only be spent on specific purposes. With that, I am joined by Annalee Garlitz. She's our environment and natural resources expert at AMC. I intersect with this issue as it comes through the county program aid appropriation, but perhaps Annalee can be more specific on some of the environmental and natural resources issues before this.
Welcome to the committee. We have about 5 minutes for discussion, so I think we kind of know about it, so just you can hit a couple highlights because we do need to provide some insight to our conferees.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Annalee Garlitz, and as Mr. Burnson said, I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Under current law, waters of the state are under the purview of DNR. Counties operate under these laws, and we are limited in the scope of activities we can undertake. If we want to do any work beyond education, currently Minnesota statute, and we're working with Representative Dill on changing this, and as well as the DNR, but this is an important kind of note that I wanted to bring forward. county, in order to do things like inspection or running wash stations, will need to get the indemnification language that's in statute right now changed to allow counties to enter into agreements with the Department of Natural Resources. And that was one note that I wanted to make, just so that if there's any questions about expectations or what the county limitations are of with this bill, that we could have that discussion if there were any questions about that. And with that, I will stand for questions and let the other testifier go. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll hear from our last testifier. Thank you for coming and waiting.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Jeff Forster, and I represent Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates. We're an organization of lake associations and COLAs across the state. Many of our members are very active volunteering on boat ramps to do education. Some of the lake associations have pooled money and have bought wash stations to use. And we strongly support this idea. What we like about it is it puts the money where the problem is, at the boat ramps, which is a pretty good way to focus it. And it seems to be equitable in that it gives the counties that have more boat ramps and more boat activity more money, and those that have less, less. And I'll be here for any questions, and thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. And Mr. Meyer, briefly, because we do need to get a couple other things
Madam
out of the
Chair,
way here.
Members,
we'll do it
across the
street at noon.
For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We do support the language that's in the Senate bill. The funding source is greatly needed. We've tried to increase this funding for the past several years to no success. We do have some concerns that if this does move forward, we will need minimal added staff or resources. We estimate we'd need to add 4 regional AIS specialists. Our enforcement efforts would need to increase by several FTEs. And we'd also need to increase our ability to train the trainers or train these inspectors that are out there. So we're estimating needs of about approximately $700,000 to help successfully implement this program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And members, I put myself on the list because I had distributed, just for your review and reaction, a couple of amendments. I have nothing against fighting aquatic invasive species. It is a big issue, and it's one that we need to address, but I'm not sure that tax policy that's oriented towards property tax relief for our local governments and based on other measures and needs is the right vehicle. And I think it sets a dangerous precedent for us peeling off parts of county program aid and local government aid for any number of purposes. And so the first amendment, the DE1, would turn it into a grant program, which I think is more appropriate, a standalone grant program rather than CPA, and it directs the Department of Natural Resources to come up with a way to make it self-sufficient in the future, which is a revenue provision appropriate to this committee. It could be you buy parking stickers for boat launches. I'm not sure. I'll leave that to the experts in that. The second one is, if you can't fight them, join them. And some of you may have read in the Star Tribune that our counties are only investigating, in some instances, 10%, other places, 80-85% of the child neglect and abuse reports that come into them. And I think if you saw the decline in that, it would actually parallel the decline in county program aid and other supports for human services. So I've put together a parallel program for that for us to consider. So just so you know, have an explanation of that background. And then Representative Drazkowski, you're going to have the last word. And other than that, we're going to have to confer with our conferees and the chair about this issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Meyer may have answered partially the question. I'm just curious as to what the relationship is with this proposal between the counties and the DNR. It seems to me that simply the money is going to be turned around and turned over to the DNR for them to grow and continue to do what they do in this area. I'm concerned also, Madam Chair and members, about what impact this might have on the relationship with future legacy spending in this area and the whole idea of supplanting versus supplementing. So I guess maybe those are more comments, but if AMC could talk about maybe what are they doing now in this area, what kind of money do you have for AIS right now, and where is that money going, and then what would be the intentional use of this money by your counties in the relationship with the DNR?
Welcome back to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Annalie Garlitz with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Right now, there's a handful of counties that are very involved with working with watershed districts, SWCDs, lakes associations, other city groups, with working on AIS. Some of them are using their own general levy dollars. Others have applied to the DNR for grants. I forget right now how much grant dollar, what the grant dollar level that's available with DNR. But there are many counties and many other groups around the state that are raising money to do AIS on their own. One of the things that I noted is that in order to be to do inspections and run wash stations, and maybe DNR can comment a little bit more on this, counties need to enter into a delegation agreement, and that was what I referred to, that the liability language right now in statute about entering into that delegation agreement is something that we're working on trying to change some of that liability language right now to make it easier for counties to enter into those agreements and be trained as different levels of inspectors under the DNR program. So there's a variety of work that's going on right now. I have some I have handouts from different counties about specifics, but it varies from, like I said, inspections, wash stations. A lot of them are doing a lot of education. So it really varies around the state.
Great. Thank you so much. And I'm sorry, members, we had such a lively discussion on the other bill. There wasn't as much time to discuss this one, but it is before the conference committee, and so I encourage members of the public as well as members here to share those comments. And I'm told someone who didn't come up earlier wants to make a brief comment. Is that quickly? We're due across the street at noon, so I'm sorry you only have at most a minute. I didn't notice you earlier.
I'll try to do it in 30 seconds. My name is Tom Watson. I'm president of the Whitefish Area Property Owners Association in Crow Wing County. We're an association of about 1,100 business and individual property owners. We're the eighth largest public body of water in Minnesota. Unfortunately, your testifiers didn't give you a couple pieces of information that I think are pretty critical. We've done a review. We had an introduction of zebra mussels in the whitefish chain last year. We have threats of Eurasian milfoil and hydrilla and a variety of other both plant and animal materials all around us on Mille Lacs, which is infested, Gull Lake, which is infested, Minnetonka, which is a large source of boats in our area when you look at the data. Right now, our budget, and we spend about $40,000 a year, and we can cover about 20% of the coverage we would need if we were to cover boat inspections at 7 public ramps, 10 hours a day, from Memorial Day to Labor Day. We cover about 20% of that demand. That's only for inspections. Our budget to do that would be $200,000. We currently have 40, and 75% of that 40 comes out of our membership dues. We get no money out of the counties, either property tax or otherwise, and we get about $10,000 in grants through the DNR that either go through the counties or directly to us. This year, we have lost 1,000 hours of inspections on the eighth largest lake in Minnesota. This is a tax committee. Let me give you one last piece of information. According to the University of Minnesota, the economic impact in the 3 months in the summer, June, July, and August, this is extension service, is $150 million worth of revenue. And we get no money out of the state to support that on the eighth largest chain of lakes in Minnesota.
Thank you very much. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone.